You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Identity Crisis. I'm Simon from York.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Simon from York. How have you been, bud?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Yeah? Well, let me see when the last time we had you on. Brothers? Looks like?
Brothers, yeah. Brothers was it.
Okay, so that was back somewhere around May. And boy, have things changed since May for me especially. But how about you? What's been going on with you lately?
Well, I've changed jobs.
Ah, me too.
Yeah, I got a new job in the last few weeks. And yeah, I've been really enjoying the new challenges and learning lots of new stuff, so yeah, pretty good. How about your job? How's that going?
It's going pretty good. It's getting better. I'm able to complete a whole shift without severe foot and leg pain. I didn't announce this last show, but I have lost almost 20 pounds since I started the job. So, I mean, I was at a high. I think the highest I ever was around 360, and I'm only 5'7". So you guys, and James, you saw me back in August. I think at that time I was still around 340. I'm now at 315. So it's getting better. I'm enjoying this. I don't eat as much. The equivalent of walking 4 miles a day. So that's the job, and there are days that I just sweat my ass off, and it just, I come in at 3 o'clock, like on a Friday and a Saturday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm sweating by four, and I don't stop until I go home, and then it's going to be fun in the winter when I walk out of there drenched in sweat, but it's helping me. So,
and I think if it's all part of the routine, right, you can't get away from it. It's going to make it quite sustainable.
Right. And, you know, and it's pretty good pay. It varies. I'm now, you know, like a salesperson in a sense because, you know, we get tips from players when they win jackpots. I mean, sometimes even when I fill the machine with papers, people give me $1, $5 as a thank you for responding quickly or whatever the case is. And we pool our tips. So tips have been pretty darn good, actually. It's averaging between $8 and $12 an hour extra. However, the job doesn't pay very much, I will say that. But in the end, it's comparable to what I had. I'm getting exercise, and it's a pretty fun gig when I'm not dealing with cranky old ladies. And they're the worst. I used to love little old ladies, you know, like little old grandmas. They're terrible. In a casino, they're terrible. But, oh well, what are you going to do? All right, guys. So we are here for Identity Crisis.
Actually, just very quickly, Lou, before you carry on, I will also announce to Simon that I was up in Yorkshire about 3 weeks ago on holiday, having fun.
Ooh, whereabouts?
So in complete fairness, we drove through Yorkshire on the way home. So oh. we technically went to Manchester, and then we headed over to headed via Halifax and Sheffield on the way back to London. Stopped into the into a childhood museum, and then more the Western Sheffields, we popped in for a pub lunch in the evening. So we weren't there for that long, but we did pass by.
Oh, nice.
Didn't go as far as York, though. I mean, Sheffield's still South Yorkshire.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Well, my wife still wants to go to England, so maybe someday we could afford it. But anyway. All right, Simon. Why don't you go ahead, continue on when you are ready.
The synopsis for tonight's show is LaForge and a former shipmate are the only officers left from an away mission 5 years ago. The others has transformed into aliens and disappeared. This is the 18th episode of Season 4 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is March the 25th, 1991. Written by Timothy DeHaas and directed by Winrich Colby. Guest stars include Marianne Plunkett as Susanna Layton, Patty Yasu, well, how do you pronounce her name? Yasu Tate as Nurse Alyssa Ogawa, Amick Bryan as Ensign Hickman, Dennis Madalone as an unnamed transporter technician, Monia Grutt as Ensign Graham,
oof,
and Major Barrett as the voice of the computer. So what do we think about this episode?
What about you? What do you... What's your preliminary report, Ensign?
This one is kind of smack bang in the middle. It's pretty average, I think. It has some good points, but it's not one of the high points of TNG, I don't think.
Okay. Yasutake. Probably Yasutake. That's the way Japanese usually pronounce everything, is by syllable, syllable. Yasutake. But anyway, I might be wrong.
By syllable.
Yes.
How else can you pronounce a word? Anyway, but what happens whenever you should have one of those very, very long names in a foreign language, and then if it, at any point you're asked, oh, how would you pronounce this? Just reply to them, oh, you know, as it's spelt.
Yeah.
And then keep walking.
Right. Right. Okay, so, Doc, what about you? What are you right on this episode?
Well, actually, first of all, that synopsis had a spoiler in it. I mean, The idea that these guys are transforming into aliens is a mystery that's kept until pretty deep into the episode. Okay, I'm going to agree with Simon that this episode is average, but it's average TNG, which means it's awesome. I like this episode a lot, and I have a lot of fun at this point. And coming back on the back of my review last week and in previous weeks, I just really enjoyed this period of TNG. These aren't necessarily like huge standout episodes, but I think a lot of stuff is working here. Anyway, I was just thinking earlier today, this might be my favorite LaForge episode. And with that thought, I'll hand over to you, Lou.
You mean your favorite LaForge episode of all time, or?
Yeah.
Really? Because I
was trying to think of a better one.
The Mind's Eye. I was kind of thinking that his performance in The Mind's Eye probably, I don't know, maybe the fact that he gets tortured is the reason why. But for me, okay, here's the deal. As I look at my notes, I've only got 16 bullet points here. And it's not because there really isn't much to talk about. It's because I kept watching the episode and forgetting to take notes. I like it. I don't know why. I'm digging it. And like you said last week, James, it's just about as creepy as last week's show. That's Night Terrors. It's not quite as creepy, but there are some moments that, you know, he gasps and I gasp at the same time. And so I like this one as well.
One of the very earliest memories of watching Star Trek, and I think I've mentioned this before, but it's no secret. The first episode I ever saw was The Naked Now. And from that point, I've been hooked. I thought it was fantastic. But I didn't watch The Naked Now early. I watched it kind of through like reruns that they had and kind of re-showings. I remember watching this, and I was quite young, 12, 13, something like that. The moment that he turns on the individual in the holodeck, and there's this black figure there that you realize it was part of the recreation, but no one saw him, I find that extremely spooky.
Yes.
I mean, that's terrifying as a kid. And when I watched it, I have all of these memories of the mystery. So, yeah, I'm going to come in very soft this week.
Better than last week, huh? No, wait a second. Maybe or maybe not. Let me go back here. I think I was the only dissent for the last episode.
You were.
Uh-huh. Colin and James both rated it a 4, and I rated it a 2.1. I couldn't even give it a 2.5. It was 2.1. It was just and it's funny, for a 4, James called it a bag of stupid. Didn't you?
I believe so. It was a bag of stupid.
But yet it was a nice, good bag of stupid, I guess.
So, Simon, what's your opinion on Night Terrors? You know, the one with Troy being lifted up into the abyss and the eyes
Where
in the night.
You?
One Moon Circles, is it? That one?
That's the one, yeah.
It's an okay episode. Yeah, probably 4 out of 5, kind of, maybe 3.5.
It is a bag of stupid, though, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so as far as this one, I do kind of appreciate this one. It's a good one. Let's see where we start here. The teaser. We start out with the video log that was created 5 years ago on Tarchanan 3. An investigation was done to explain why the entire outpost was eliminated and missing, and the only thing found was a Starfleet uniform. Now, the away team that investigated that disappearance is starting to disappear themselves. 3 have already deserted. 1 they're trying to track down at this time. Only Lieutenant Lighten, who we never see before and we've never seen again, and Geordi LaForge remain, and it would appear 3 of the 5 were headed towards Tarchanan. So it's time to try and catch the 3rd. Will they do it? Dun, dun, dun. And then the teaser. What do you think of the teaser so far? Anyone?
I'm giving our room to speak. Our guest room to speak.
Okay.
The teaser wasn't bad. It's good to see the old style uniforms, because it was kind of set 5 years ago. So you got to see a younger Geordi. It was fairly interesting.
Yeah.
I remember specifically watching this. I think this is the first time, at least when I was watching, that I saw them reference the past and keep it in uniform, keep it in, you know, in the style that they had. So it wasn't just that, oh, we've forgotten to change Geordi into red and he got the old style uniform. And I really appreciated the fact that they, you know, they kept that. And in a way, you know, why wouldn't they? But in another way, if you didn't know that he used to be in red, it might confuse you that he's now in gold or blah, blah, blah. So I remember noting that as a particularly kind of, you know, OCD struck teenager. I have to say, I should probably complain, but it's good that these people disappear so close to the planet, so they can just about get there in a shuttlecraft. Because, you know, really, why are these people anywhere near the planet that they were at however many years ago?
That's a good question. Unless the shuttle they stole is warp capable.
But even so, right, we've had instances of people being told that we might not be back to your planet in your lifetime.
Right.
Yet you can find a way, you know, they turn quickly. We see later that they turn quickly. So between Geordi turning and him running away, it's, you know, a day or at most. But despite that, they all seem to be close enough to have been able to get to the planet or to head in that direction, at least in the shuttle.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter. I'm not really criticizing.
Well, here's another thing that doesn't matter. I'm looking at the a screenshot of the USS Victory, which wasn't the Victory captained by Zimbada or something. If you remember back, I think it was a Professor Moriarty one. They were going to meet with the Victory.
I think you're thinking about the Lollipop.
Well, no. That was,
and that's gonna be my standard response to any ship question where I'm not entirely sure.
Okay. Because I thought,
but I think you might be right.
Yeah, because I thought Geordi built a model of the ship of the Victory. It was his gift to Captain Zabata, and I think Geordi had a cold at the time he said that. But I think I mentioned that as well. Anyway, it says Stardate 40164. They say it's 5 years later. That should make it 45164 or thereabouts. But the Stardate here is 44664. That looks like 4 years and a handful of months. Is it? Do you think it's just it's a slight nitpick, but maybe it's just a glitch or on the Stardate? Or anything over 4 years was 5 years ago.
You know, if New Year was in between, right, you would have said 5 years ago.
That makes sense, I suppose.
But it's more or less 5 years. And it's also, you know, it's pre-Geordi joining the Enterprise, and at least that ties up Stardate-wise.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. But Susanna has the same hairdo, close to the same hairdo, as she did then, too. Okay, so what's this stuff about Susanna? No, she doesn't have the same hairdo. Her hair is a little goofy today than it was back then. Matter of fact, she has a terrible hairdo in this episode. Pretty girl, but terrible hairdo.
It's a 90s hairdo, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of hair in the 90s was bad. But actually, I noticed that both of them made Lieutenant Commander in the, you know, in that shorter window. And considering that Geordi was basically meteoric in his ascent through the ranks, that's also quite impressive.
Right. So what's the stuff about Suzanne's little brother? You know, that doesn't sound like my little brother who needed advice on women. Which, boy, Geordi always needs advice on women.
I think they just had a kind of a sibling kind of relationship, kind of like a brother-sister relationship rather than any kind of romantic thing between the two of them.
Yeah, I think the writers obviously had to make sure very and state clearly that this was not a hologram and Geordi was not having relationships with this woman.
Right. Okay, so the same, her little brother is like Data being the father of the bride thing. That makes sense. Just filled in a role that somebody else couldn't fill into. I don't know. So, what do you guys think of the ponytailed ensign this week? And I don't even know why I'm bringing her up. It's just, for some reason, I just kept my eyes locked on her as she was talking. And, you know, the ship was in visual rage.
Do you mean the lady at Con?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's cute. I can't imagine Riker hasn't already tried to get into that. Commander.
Right.
Or something.
Okay, I know you guys have just elected a new president, but I'm gonna be good here and say that I'm sure she's a competent bridge officer.
Very. I just like the way she says, you know, something's in visual range. Something about that range word, range, it was very, I guess, visual range. You guys didn't notice that?
I don't think I even noticed the ensign, sorry.
She's a cutie. Little ponytail and all. Okay.
And by the way, just to be clear, the reason why I notice is that I've actually got the episode playing as we talk.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I've got it in the background.
I have it on, but I usually just flip over, you know, through scenes as we go if there's something I need to look at again. But okay, how is this shuttle out of transporter range? Don't they beam objects from planets, you know, that big ball that's even past the shuttle?
You're assuming they're within transporter range of the planet. which may or may not be true. But look, this kind of stuff comes down to the plot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Okay. Because you can't, and then there's no positive lock on the tractor beam. Well, even if you get a negative lock, give it a try. But I guess not. Poor guy, he blows up. Next thing you know, he's gone. So anything you guys want to add before I go on to the Federation flashlight?
So why exactly does his shuttle blow up? Is the homing instinct of Lieutenant Hickman so bad that he'll crash his shuttle? Is that the reason for that? Or?
Let me try this, James.
So
hold on.
I thought you were about to say that is his own instinct so bad he spontaneously combusts and takes the shuttle with him?
Let me try that.
Sorry, go on.
I think it's the same reason why the space shuttle has to land in a 2-degree pi wedge, is that if you don't, you'll skip off the atmosphere, or if you go too steep, you'll burn up. And I think that's obviously what happened to him. He didn't approach the planet at a right angle. Is that right, James?
Well, but I thought Simon was talking about what's driving him to do that. So, you know, is he, you know, has he like turned into someone that doesn't know how to control the shuttle and as a result effectively crashes into the atmosphere or what? But yeah, you are right. You kind of do need to come in. But then again, I mean, shuttles, look, you know, we're talking about shuttles that we have built with less than 10 years. No, much less than 10 years. So it's almost immediately after we've started to launch satellites, we can make shuttles or we can make things that can come back into the atmosphere. You'll then fast forward in 400 years from now, you should have been able to design something that would not blow up if you happen to be slightly off in your pitch. I just think that technology-wise, you should have found something to solve this problem.
Right. And unless the shuttle was on manual at the time and not computer-controlled. And he obviously turned into the Tar-Channon. So, and you, like you said, was he an alien that didn't know how to use the technology and therefore went in at a wrong angle? Geordi knew how to use the transporter when he was transformed. Spoiler. Okay. All right, so the Federation flashlight, is that what they call the palm beacon? Or just a flashlight?
I've never heard of that term before.
Okay. But what do you think of the Federation flashlight? To me, it seemed pretty bright. It's just a little bulky. Dead air, guys.
It's just a torch, isn't it, really? It's what can we say about a light that people hold?
I don't know. I want one of those, though. I'd love to have one of those. Okay. So anyway, go ahead.
So I was about to say, next time we're in Vegas and we're tempted by those $400 tricorders, we'll see if they've got a flashlight.
Right. The Federation flashlight. So during an away team mission, Commander Lighten wanders off and is found by Geordi. And she was actually getting spooky herself as she was convinced the missing crew are here. They're here. I can feel them. And now she wants to stay herself, which Geordi has to fight with her to get an emergency beam out. Oh. See, this is a problem. This is my problem with this episode. I just wanted to watch it. I didn't want to make notes about it. So I had to come up with stuff, and I'm coming up with pretty bad things to talk about. So,
well, so something that I think is worthwhile is that I think the, first of all, I think the special guest this week is very good. I like her interaction with Geordi. I think it's very natural. I think it's nice where they've positioned the character from a writing perspective. I also think that she plays it well, that at the beginning, until around maybe halfway through the episode, you don't know whether or not she's affected or not. She kind of walks that line. I think she has a little bit of a shake, a little bit of a temper. But you know, a disagreement with Geordi as she wants to stay on the planet, but you don't really know where she's going. And as a result, I think it kind of builds into the spookiness.
Oh, yeah, because she gets increasingly agitated as time goes on, that she can't understand why they just won't let her go back down, because everything we need is down there. Okay. Well, anyway, let's see here. What do you think of the close-up on her eyes? You don't.
Do you mean when she's in the bed when she's effectively, so you know, around that halfway point, I suppose, she ends up in sick bay and they've started to see the transformation and she's got the, well, it looks like she's just got like, is that like a, that must be a post effect kind of glow rather than contact lenses or anything like that.
Well, that was later, but I mean, as Geordi called for the emergency beam out to sick bay. Once we get to sickbay, we have her. She hasn't been transformed yet. She just had a little anxiety thing. But the camera was so close to her eyeball that, you know, it looked a little odd to me. But you're right. Later, when she has a glow, those are pretty cool.
I wondered if that close-up of her eyes was supposed to be indicating that she'd started to transform or something. But it looked like normal eyes to me.
Yeah. I mean, they were on her face as she was waking up out of this whatever she was in. So, I mean, that was pretty darn close. You could see every eyelash. And you could even see up her nose as she was turning her head. That's a different story. All right. So I said she was obsessed with getting back to the planet. She has a kind of a little minor convulsion. I wasn't sure if the acting on that was all that great, but that's okay. Guys, talk.
John, what about?
Anything. I mean, you guys took notes, didn't you?
Sure. Should I defer to Simon?
If you wish. Simon.
Sorry, what?
guide us on some of this, because like I told you, my notes here are pretty thin, because I was busy watching, so I'd like to see what you guys came up with so far.
Not a lot.
The thing is, in a way, right, I think we've had this on a number of episodes. Actually, maybe for the last couple of weeks as well, there hasn't really been a B-plot in the series as well. You've kind of had these single line stories that have that everything has kind of stood on this one spooky event, and it kind of has to be like that. You know, last weekend as well as this week, you can't have spooky A plot and like comedy B plot. It wouldn't really make sense. So similar to last week, you've really got a relatively simple story that you're trying to tell through the Geordi character. I personally do find the story good. I think it's well executed. It's almost that, you know, right at the beginning, there's a threat that's put onto Geordi and the secondary character that we've been introduced to, and then you see her turning. You know something bad is happening, and you know that it's not going to stop with the lady in sick bay that's going to turn into a whatever she ends up turning into. So I really enjoy the way that Geordi is behaving, and he kind of, you know, he has to comfort someone that's ahead of in the phase than he is, but also at the same time, you know that he knows he's eventually lost as well. So I really like it. I really like it really much as a kind of like as a character piece on Geordi. But there aren't that many moments in the episode where you can say, you know, hey, wasn't it cool when this happened, or wasn't it cool when that happened? Because it's really much more about mood and the feeling of the episode rather than like character interactions. In particular, in this time round, at least, that it's very much a Geordi isolation experience.
Right. Okay, so Crusher wants to confine Geordi to sickbay, but he wants to continue his investigation. So what's the solution that they come up with? Program the computer to monitor movements.
Well, they could have just told Data to follow him as well, though, right?
Right.
I mean, in so many occasions, Data and Geordi work well together. And, you know, to a certain extent, they do a little bit in this episode. But if you're worried about Geordi turning into someone, just keep Data with him.
Yeah.
He can be his wingman.
Yeah, because it seemed to me that maybe the computer had a bad day or something, because it sure missed a few things. Like when he ran out of the holodeck as soon as they opened it, or into the transporter. And of course, now that was a pretty good effect of Geordi running into the transporter. I mean, because it was like you could see a ripple effect, but you could see through him. But since Geordi is missing and everybody's trying to escape to the planet, what do you say we put the transporter on lockdown?
Yeah, it would make sense to take it offline.
Yeah, it would. But, nah. Geordi's not that kind of guy. But before he does that, he's in engineering watching the video from 5 years ago. And that was pretty creepy also when that moment when he says, "Whoa, whose shadow was that?"
Well, before that, right, he puts it onto the holodeck, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's because of the video. He saw a shadow on the video, and he had the computer spectral enhance the two, three shadows in different colors, and he's like, "Whose shadow is that?" And the computer couldn't explain it. So later, he goes to the holodeck and recreates it.
Okay, sure. Actually, so I do have to say, I don't think I could have followed his logic through. As he was watching it, I wasn't getting all of these, I wasn't seeing the shadow. I'm really afraid to say. I didn't see what he was supposed to be seeing, and I think it didn't click in my mind. And I'm not entirely sure if we're expected to click. But I thought, it's a fairly nice scene. And actually, I think it's also a very good use of the holodeck, right? You kind of want to use the holodeck in this manner.
Right.
And you wonder why more people don't.
Yeah, you would think. But the thing about him finding that shadow, he asked the computer whose shadow was that before it even came up. So as the lady was walking towards the camera, as she gets closer to camera, the shadow comes up, but she was too far back. The shadow was nowhere near it when he asked whose shadow was that. So that's probably they probably dubbed that line a little too quickly.
That shadow was quite hard to spot, I thought. Then I suppose Geordi was watching that video over and over, so perhaps he would have spotted it. And it was good use of the holodeck to kind of try and find out exactly where that shadow was coming from.
Yes.
How the computer managed to work it out from just that two-dimensional video, I don't know.
Okay, so now, do you think... Okay, I don't know if you guys noticed this at all, but maybe it's a little OCD on my part, and forgive the printer. You had the printer last week, Doc. I've got the printer this week.
Yeah, it wasn't through any choice of my own, though.
No, this was my fault.
Actually, after the show, I went over to the wife and I said, "Oh, did you realize I was, I was obviously recording in there and you were sending stuff to be printed?" And she gave me the look, which basically is the Keiko look, which is, "I don't care. What makes you think I care?" And I kind of went, "Okay, sure, I agree. And you are right." And then we had a rest of the night was happy.
Yeah. See, you were, just as you left last week. No, they didn't hear this on the recording, but you were like, "Okay, I have got to go." And I just as you hung up, I said, "All right, now go get Cassie a little brother or sister." But no, you didn't hear that part.
No. And
okay, so let's talk about my OCD streak here. During the holodeck program, I was noticing that when the simulation was frozen, I could not help but watch the people as their bodies were shaking.
Oh, I saw them wobble, yeah. I spotted that one.
I'm like, oh, man. I cannot get past that. And, but that's probably a little OCD. All right. So, Dr. Crusher. But
right, it does show you that, you know, it was filmed in a time where that would have had to have been done. Because and then they didn't always do it like that, of course. I think there are instances where they don't, and in particular, like Timescape, where there are all these action scenes that have been paused. But, you know, it obviously costs money to put that effect on and to have someone else green screen into it. And also, frankly, at this time of the civilization, green screen wasn't that good. So you could easily have had, the choice being made to keep the actors still is the choice of not having green screen. And if you did notice them wobble, you're probably going to notice the green screen just as bad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, probably. Okay. All right, so Dr. Crusher, in a stunning and rare moment of medical genius, is able to determine what invaded Commander Lighten's body. And not only that, she's able to find it, remove it, and save her life.
She is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and Geordi's as well. So she actually saved not one, but two patients in this episode.
Well, hang on. She didn't save them. She really merely prevented them from joining a cult and having some fun on a planet.
Yeah.
So maybe it wasn't, maybe a better life awaited them on the planet.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. Captain Janeway and Lieutenant Paris' children are sure enjoying life on whatever planet that was. But okay, well, I still think that it was stunning that she actually was able to help them. Let's see. I said the see-through O'Brien was impressive. And, of course, the transporter guy gets knocked down. Irrelevant.
But hang on, so you're stepping through all of the stuff on the holodeck. And I think how that procedurally plays out is very good. I think it's what you obviously have to realize is that when you do have these blasts from the past and things on the video clip that they had, they obviously had to film it, right? And it's actually just really cool that they then just effectively restaged it on the holodeck, including the guy that was filming. So, it would have been a very easy nitpick to say, hang on a second, who's filming that? But they've even got that guy there. He gets deleted, but he was there for a while.
Right, and even in when they run the simulation forward, and then he freezes and everybody wobbles again, and then he runs it backward, the guy running the camera had a different facial expression on the backwards than he did the frontwards. So,
nitpicks,
yes, exactly. It's OCD. It has to be OCD. Okay. So, let's see here. And again, we get another example of how the ship personnel really could use some training. Simulations training. The transporter can't be turned off in time because the transport's already begun. Okay, I already talked about why they didn't lock it out, so I guess there's no reason to worry about that. But Susanna survives, and she still has a little bit of blue veinish things on her. And there go the dog barks. But she beams down with Data and Riker and I think Worf with that UV light. UV light was pretty cool. But I couldn't help but notice how Data was assembling the beacon in the most slowest way possible. It was like every step was methodical. He just held that little piece of plastic up, and he slowly put it down. Did you guys notice that at all?
Yeah, what happened to the android speed he had in Brothers? He did it so slowly so that he could make it last the 2 minutes or whatever he told Riker it would take.
Yeah. Yeah, it was 2 minutes. And that was, it was interesting, too, because there were a lot of little parts on that table at the time. He said it would take 2 minutes to assemble. But it just seemed so painstakingly and methodically slow. But it worked, because they find Geordi and they find two Tarchanans that may or may not be our missing crew members. And now it's time to stop him before he transforms completely. Do you wonder why they couldn't communicate with each other? The aliens?
They were kind of a primitive species that didn't kind of ran on instinct rather than anything else.
But yet they knew to hang around with each other.
Yeah, but so did, like, you know, wolves and things, right? Certain things hunt in packs.
Yeah, I guess. Okay.
Did anyone else also get a vibe from, you know, well, not necessarily a vibe, but like slight forward flashes, flash forwards to, what's the episode? There's the episode in season 3 of Enterprise, where they all kind of evolve into these weird and wonderful species. What's that one called? It's like the third episode of the third season. And then, and
Extinction?
It is Extinction, yes. And Lou, when you were talking about why don't they talk to each other, I just had a flash forward to that episode and thought, well, they don't talk to each other because they sound stupid when they're trying to talk gibberish to each other.
Right.
So I'm much happier for them to behave like, you know, quasi apes and run on instinct than to go all, I have no idea how I should describe it, Extinction.
Okay. All right, so they find Geordi. And she's able to talk him off the ledge, grab a hold of him, and beam him back up. Really, this is going to be a quickie, because I'm done. This is it.
Well, actually, I mean, I think, you know, I did mention that I think it's a relatively simple story that they play. And you also mentioned that, you know, how Data takes his time doing his thing. It is a relatively padded episode. There's not... You can just describe it as, you know, Geordi is turning into an alien. He kind of has to try to solve a mystery. He doesn't do it in time, and then someone manages to, you know, to cure him. That's really about it. But it's not about that, right? The how well this episode is executed is much more about the feeling, about the mood of the episode, and how engaged you are, kind of emotionally into the characters. And I think it works, and I think it works that, you know, at the end it's what's her name? The visitor that is on the ship this week. She's the one that, you know, edges Geordi back, not Dr. Crusher. I mean, Dr. Crusher would have been running after him as he left. So it's good that at least she knows when to step back and allow someone else to do the first contact.
Right. Okay. All right. And in and again, the last scene was kind of touching in sickbay when he thanks her for, you know, helping him. And no problem.
Does anyone else think that the design of the aliens is cool?
Oh, it's because awesome.
Yeah, because again, I mean, so much of season 4, I always remember watching first as a child, and it's so vivid and it's so. So spooky. And another thing that, I mean, we haven't really spoken about, but the thing that makes this episode like scary, right, is that this happened a long time ago. It comes back and it bites you, and you don't know, you know, if you're affected. And when you do change, you change quickly. And, you know, it's not, they could have done this episode with Geordi going down to the planet and getting bitten by something and then later in the episode turning. But it's something from the distant past, and that kind of adds an extra kind of threat. And you know, I feel empathy for Geordi at this point because I think, well, hang on a second. I went down to that, you know, I went into that forest once, and you know, maybe something was planted under my DNA, and maybe I'm going to change next week. So I think it's a nice a nice spooky story in the way that it's executed.
Yeah, but it's awfully convenient that they all get affected around the same time.
True. And it is also, yeah, true. And you don't know what's going to be triggering it, but you could actually argue that, you know, these guys are in space, they're kind of at warp, they're kind of, you know, they're probably going through space in a way that they would probably age at different speeds merely based on relativity alone. So even if you were to make an argument that, you know, the alien DNA somehow was perfectly synchronized, which is probably not true, it's probably has to be connected to your body as well, but even if you did make that argument, in Star Trek, it's very unlikely that you would physically age the same as other people just due to you being around massive stellar bodies or going faster than the speed of light. But they never addressed that in Star Trek, so maybe it's a bit petty to bring it up here.
Or maybe it was triggered to go off at a certain star date.
Well, that's less... I can live with the idea of it taking X amount of time, but I'm not... But to go off on a particular star date,
yeah,
you'd almost need to have an event that would flag up that now it's that star date. And that would have to be within relativity. That would have to be like a frame agnostic sign, which I don't think you can technically define.
Right.
Without breaching the laws of causality. But anyway, doesn't matter.
No. Do you think Riker and Worf would have become infected and probably needed treatment before they could go on with life?
I could only assume that was in like season 9, in between First Contact and Insurrection. You wonder what they got up to. But yeah, I assume that happened.
I see, because Crusher forgot to take it out of Worf and Riker and Timely. Okay. Well, anyway, sorry about that. I'm tired. That's pretty much all I had. 16 points, and I even skipped a few because I said, oh, come on, that sounds stupid now.
I like what's it? Hang on. A point that I'll bring up. I like that Crusher has a nurse, and I like Ogawa kind of hanging around pretty much from now, or pretty much, you know, a little bit earlier than now for the rest of the run. I always thought that it made sense for Crusher to have staff, and the fact that she does, and it's kind of the same one. And in fact, Ogawa turns up in Generations, if I'm not mistaken. Does she turn up in First Contact? I can't remember. But she stays with them.
And it's in First Contact.
You're right, because it's in the scene with in sickbay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I always loved her. I think she's great.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, she even has a miscarriage.
In Genesis.
Ah.
Oh, she gave birth to a lizard or something.
Yeah. Yeah, oh
is
yeah.
Is it Genesis? No. Sorry, it's a... Does she lose the baby in Genesis, or does she lose the baby in All Good Things?
It's All Good Things, yeah.
It is All Good Things.
Time goes backwards, and yeah, she loses the baby.
Yeah. Hmm. Or does that get reversed?
All Good Things gets reversed.
I don't quite know where we're on the timeline, but does the baby survive? I can't remember.
I don't think it does. You know, the only time I remember a baby surviving was Naomi. One died, the other survived. As well as so did Harry Kim. One Kim died, one Kim survived.
Yep.
Yeah. So, okay then. Pretty quickie. We're done.
Okay, pretty quickie.
Yeah. You guys have anything more?
I believe this is one of Brandon Braga's first scripts. And I kind of think it kind of shows his kind of creepy style, doesn't it?
Brandon Braga?
I'm sure I read that on Memory Alpha.
Let me check it. No, that's why we had... it was written by someone else.
Maybe he just worked on it afterwards or something.
I wonder if he did.
I mean, if he'd been brought in as a staff, right?
I guess that's a good question. What's the difference between the teleplay by and the story by?
So the story is the outline of the story. So it's like when you write the story. So if you were to write like a synopsis and what happens when, and the teleplay is when people will write the actual dialogue and the lines being said. And sometimes you'll have the written by, which is basically you wrote the entire thing. Now, usually what will happen is that people will send in scripts and they will have a good kind of story behind them, but they'll need to be, things will need to be changed, and the dialogue will need to be tightened up, and maybe even a couple of scripts will be combined into one, like, you know, bigger script with more stuff going on. And in those circumstances, it's not uncommon for people to have story by credits and then the actual kind of master sewer together, for want of a better word, gets like the teleplay credit. So I imagine at this point, if Brandon Braga's on as teleplay, I assume at this point he's on the staff in writing staff, and he's probably, you know, working on this script and actually polishing up all the lines from someone else's story.
Oh, okay. So I should probably be putting both people down as the writer.
Yeah, well, without question.
Oops, sorry, guys. In fact,
I'm pretty sure their union requires that.
Jeez. I guess you and I are going to have to start all over again and do this entire thing from the beginning. So everything you heard before is all bull. We have to start at Encounter at Farpoint. The good thing is that when we first started, we didn't have any guests. Now we might be able to get guests. All right, I'm going to end the suffering here. It's now time for our for a good episode. This was a terrible review, I got to be honest. It's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. I'm going to end it. Let's go. 16 points, didn't do them all. And again, not because I wasn't interested, because I kept watching and had to force myself to try and go back and take notes. I like this episode. It doesn't always go on car rides with me, but it's very good. I like Suzanne. She seems very charming. Geordi, he's well done this week. I think LeVar did pretty darn good with this one. He's not his usual asshole self. Sorry, guys. I did mean to say that. He's not his usual jerk. But the young ensign, she's hotter than Sin. So I'm sure Riker, you know, has an occasional issue on the bridge sometimes. The story seems sometimes creepy, a little spooky, but it was very well done. I love the holodeck scenes. I love the planet rescue. It's just all good. Not perfect. It's not a 5, but it's close. So I want to give this one a 4. And what you guys give it a 2.1. So, Simon, I should have let you go first. I'm sorry. So why don't you go next?
I think I still say what I said at the start. It's a pretty average episode. It's a Geordi episode, and Geordi's never really been my favourite character. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5.
A 3 out of 5. Yeah, see, Geordi used to be my favorite character till I started this show. And then I started looking at what a jerk he could be at times. But he's got some pretty good ones coming up, so I like him so far. Doc?
Yeah, I mean, I've never been the biggest Geordi fan. I always thought that Geordi was a... Geordi was hanging out with Data because Geordi wanted to be cool. I agree with you, Lou. I think this is a 4 out of 5. It's not a great episode. It's not a big episode. It's not a substantial episode. It's a little small, spooky story with Geordi. And I think it's one of Geordi's better episodes. I'm trying to rack my brain as to whether it's his best episode. Maybe we will keep track as the seasons go by. I just really enjoy it. I have very positive memories of this, and it really worked. The storyline worked and stayed with me as a kind of a really weird mystery that there was actually, you know, quite frightening for 12, 13 year old myself. So I've always liked this one. I think that Geordi does a good job of, you know, in the scenes where he's in that, he like has to carry the show. And then maybe despite not liking Geordi, I don't think he does anything wrong per se. And I also think that the guest stars are very strong this week. Gives a nice characterization of Geordi and his time before the Enterprise. So overall, you know, two thumbs up.
All right. So that would be two thumbs up times two hands equals a four.
That's not how it works.
Well, it has to, unless you're giving it a two.
No, it's two thumbs up. The scale is one thumb down, no thumbs up, one thumb up, two thumbs up, three thumbs up. That's how my scale from one to five goes.
Oh, I see. So let me go back to First Contact when you gave it a five. Whose thumb were you using at the time?
It's three thumbs up. It's ownership does not form part of the score. It's just three thumbs up.
Oh, okay. I see. Just not your thumbs.
No.
Just the saying thumbs. Okay. Shut up, Luke. All right, Simon. Hey, thanks for coming on. And I don't think... Let me see if I have you for anything else this season. No, I don't. So.
No, I'll be back for something in season five, whenever that starts.
No, yeah. Look forward.
Luke, should we open season five at some point?
Do you want to open it now?
I think it might be appropriate to open it now.
Oh, first pick.
Yeah, right. Okay, I tell you what. When this comes out, be looking for this to come out, Simon. And when this comes out, then start looking for season five.
Where do they look for this? Magic schedule?
At trekmatefamily.com. Just go to the top of the... When you go to the top of the page, and I'm going to pull this up to make sure nothing has changed, you're going to see podcasts. And under there, we're number two, right under Trekmate. Oh, that's funny.
I thought we used to be number one. I thought Mark put us up to number one for a while after I complained about it.
Yeah, we were like, why are we way down there under everyone else? And all of a sudden he put us up.
Oh, yeah, I think we were underneath a lot of stuff that is no longer being produced. I think at that point, I'm just looking now, and they don't have Brace for Impact anymore. But I'm pretty sure we were below Brace for Impact whilst, you know, only like 4 or 5 months ago.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right there. But I don't know. I think they need to put Upper Pylon above us. They do a little better job than we do. And then, so when you hover over the Battle Bridge, you're going to see the Battle Bridge Season 4 schedule. Or it will be season five now. I might as well go ahead and change it soon. But yeah, we'll put that up there around the time the show goes out. So be looking for that, guys. And they'll go fast. They're going to go fast. They always do. So be looking. Simon, again, thank you for coming on the show. And we look forward to having you again in the future.
A bizarre accident turns man into machine.
Lieutenant, you are probably the most advanced human being who ever lived.
A new power takes command of the Enterprise.
How do we get him out of there?
We don't. Not without killing him.
And he's sending the crew on a death mission.
We are in danger.
Remove yourself from the computer system.
And we have lost computer control.
12 seconds to critical.
Mind Trap on the next exciting episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
So, everyone, why don't you join us next time as we review episode number 19, The Nth Degree. Oh, I love that one, too. Computer, create as follows. Anyway, well, it'll be fun. And we should have Mark Stamper on for that one. So, everyone, take care. Oh, and by the way, my score for this review probably is hovering around a 2. Even less than the 2.1 I gave Night Terrors. And good night.
Okay, good night. And I've only just realized, Lou, that you were doing an impression there of Barkley.
Yeah.
It took me about 5 or 6 minutes to actually realize what you were going on about there.
computer, create as follows. Workstation chair. Boy, he's lucky that workstation chair showed up when it did, because he just swiveled around and slammed his ass right on it. But we'll talk about that next week. Say goodnight, Simon.
Night, everyone.
All right.